You are listening to the News Project in Studio, brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome to another edition of GNAT TV's in-depth series. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director here at GNAT TV's News Project. It's a pleasure as always to have you with us today. It's also a pleasure to be joined here in the studio by three folks who are here to tell us a little bit about the day-long economic summit that will be taking place on May 23rd over at Mount Snow in Dover, Vermont. With us today are Sarah Lang, who is the project manager for the Southern Vermont Economy Project. That's run by the Brattleboro Development Credit Corporation, and the purpose is to help stabilize, improve, and expand the rural economic and workforce development network in Southern Vermont. Also good to have back with us today, Jonathan Cooper, who is the Community and Economic Development Specialist with the Bennington County Regional Commission, and also Bill Colvin, who is the Assistant Director and Community Development Program Coordinator with the Bennington County Regional Commission and is also the Director of the Bennington County Industrial Corporation. Folks, thanks very much for being with us today and making the time out of what I know are some very busy schedules to be with us.
My pleasure. Thanks.
So this summit is the third, I believe, in a series that has been held since 2017. Just to get us started, Sarah, tell us a little bit about the summit. What's going to be going on and what are some of the purposes that folks will be learning about?
Sure. So like you said, this is the third annual Southern Vermont Economy Summit. It's on May 23rd, and we are hosting it at Mount Snow, which is the same location that we hosted it last year. This is sort of an ideal location because it's a two-county-wide event, and so that's sort of smack dab in the middle. And like you said, it's day-long. There's 12 sessions throughout the day. It's a summit that is for anybody. Really, you know, we have sessions for small business owners, for data geeks, for CEOs, for town officials, for you name it, community members. So the way we like to look at it is it's a day-long learning and networking opportunity for people to really get together around, you know, believing in and caring for our Southern Vermont economy's future.
And tickets are still available, and folks can go to the website if they after they listen to our conversation today and they think, hey, I got to be there. SOVermontSummit.com.
You got it. Yep. So we're selling it all the way up to the summit. Mm-hmm. People can buy at the door. However, we suggest buying earlier. But, you know, if you decide last minute that you should be there and you want to be there, we'll sell you a ticket.
So the day seems to be broken up into a series of workshops. There'll be a featured speaker. There'll be a couple of presentations. I guess it was interesting. You have a number of workshops that deal with economic questions and also about community revival. There seem to be a few there about, how to, revive communities and sort of what are resilient communities. I guess I wondered, how did you all set up the agenda and the set of workshops? Was there anything that drove the selection?
Yeah, that's a great question. So so every year, like we said, this is the third year. Every year we've expanded the diversity and the offerings of our workshops. We were really intentional this year to have a great selection. So we were not only providing sessions for small business owners, but also town managers. And so essentially there are, at one time there are four different sessions you can go to. Two are more sort of business owner-oriented, workforce-oriented, and two are more kind of community or regional level oriented. And so, like you said, there's, how to finance great projects. There's, what makes resilient communities, talking about regional lessons learned. So there's just, it's all over the place, but around that core theme of Southern Vermont's future.
And I think, if I can just jump on quickly, I think one of the avenues of opportunity was the fact that there's a fair amount of core competency in village revitalization, downtown revitalization that exists within the Southern Vermont region. We're fortunate to have M&S Development, Bob Stevens and his team, who was very successful with the Brooks House, now is working in Bennington on the Putnam Block redevelopment. That's a complex set of revitalization and financing strategies that two communities, the two kind of anchor communities in each county have been able to rely upon. And there have been lessons there that we think translate well, not only to other areas of Vermont, but to other rural communities across, mm-hmm. across the country. So I think writ large, we've tried to incorporate, to the extent possible, those elements of expertise within Southern Vermont in a way to kind of showcase what really does exist here and why, in fact, it makes sense to invest in Southern Vermont as a region.
And to add on to that, there's another component that sort of informs what the annual summit looks like, and that is the previous year's summits. We do a lot of work to capture feedback from attendees day of, and then sort of following up with additional questions and soliciting comments and feedback. And that was something that you could see, for instance, in our second summit, we had many more women presenting, offering their insights from their leadership roles. It's something that we heard very clearly from our first summit. Mm-hmm. And this year, you'll see there's a lot more networking time built in, for example. That was something people wanted to come to the summit to continue conversations with one another and to have ample time throughout the day to do that. So there's the sort of the state of the art that we see going on in Southern Vermont from some of our, people with those core competencies that Bill referred to, sort of taking the temperature of the region where we see initiatives in communities, say like the Arlington Area Renewal Project. We see Pownall's Economic Development Committee coming to the forefront, that some successes and wins like Long Falls, the paperboard, those inform what the summit will look like. But then it's also really what we're hearing from a previous iteration, so that we're really making the best pitch that we can to the public, and we're excited to say that this will be, of our third year, this will be a larger crowd every year. Mm-hmm. And so we're hoping that we're hitting the nail on the head that way as well.
And not only the 12 sessions, but we also have our keynote speaker, Joe Minakazi. He is out of Asheville, North Carolina. He presented a few years ago at the Downtown and Historic Preservation Conference here in Vermont, but we asked him to come back because there's some overlap in the attendees that went there that will also be at our conference, but I think he'll get a whole new crowd. And he really talks about, helps rural regions kind of re-envision how to, how smart investment can shape that sustainable community. He works really closely with land use and sort of looks at tax yield per acre. And he's a really great speaker, too, which is important in these kind of topics. He's very engaging. So on top of that, we also have a couple special events that are happening throughout the day. One, we're having a connectivity breakfast. This is a follow-up to the past 2 years' connectivity summits that we've hosted. And this will be just a time to sort of hear an update from state and federal people on what's been happening as far as, at the state level with, I think it's Bill H513. And then from the federal level here, kind of what are some movement there. And then to just have kind of a conversation with people who are in attendance as well as sort of experts in the room. And then we're also celebrating our emerging leaders of Southern Vermont. We ask people in the community to nominate young professionals that are really sort of rising to the top as participating not only in their work, but out in the community as well. So we'll be celebrating that. And then last but definitely not least is our celebration of the 2019 Southern Vermont Zone SEDS and the SEDS projects. SEDS project submissions. So these are interspersed throughout the schedule, but it's, I think a great mix of all things Southern Vermont. Mm-hmm.
So the SEDS thing is short for Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy.
You got it. It's easier to say SEDS. That's what I mean.
Well done. Tell us a little bit about that. I know a lot of viewers have probably heard that expression and kind of maybe have an understanding of what it is, but I wonder if you all could walk us through that a little bit, and at least in terms of where it stands at the moment. That's a multi-year project that you've been working on, I think, roughly since, 2015, 16 or so?
Head. Well,
not quite.
Yeah, it depends on how you define the project, I think. So if you look at the interrelationship among Bennington and Windham County and that relationship and building on that, then yeah, that goes back to 2015, and the 2016 legislature actually created the Southern Vermont Economic Development Zone, which formally defined Bennington and Windham County as an economic development zone, which gave us some legitimacy to the you know, partnering work that we'd already been doing between the two counties. So if you look at that as kind of the genesis of the Southern Vermont SEDS, then, you know, I think that's a reasonable date. The actual SEDS process itself, which was funded in part by a planning grant from the U.S. Economic Development Administration, started roughly a year ago. And we brought on Camoin Associates to assist with that process. Camoin is the same organization, folks in North Shire will know, helped with the North Shire Economic Development Strategy.
Or NEDS.
Or NEDS, yes, not as opposed to SEDS, absolutely. So that process, again, has been about the last year. It's been an incredibly inclusive, I think, public process. We've had over, I think, 13 public meetings. We had over a dozen focus groups broken down in all sorts of sectors, mm-hmm. from healthcare to the creative economy to education, mm-hmm. To help me out with some of the other ones, housing.
Yeah, we had childcare. We had two sessions on childcare, and we had mentioned K-12,
small business,
technology, mm-hmm. entrepreneurialism. So we tried to reach as many broad sort of underpinnings of the economy as possible, and then one-on-one interviews with some business leaders as well that were unable to make it to specific focus groups to bring out that combination of conversations en masse, more industry-specific conversations, and then some one-on-ones to get an awful lot of honesty, an awful lot of insights, and to bring that to bear in the document itself.
So, The Windham County had its own comprehensive economic development strategy, which is actually coming up, was coming up for renewal concurrent this spring. When Windham County got permission from the EDA to do its own SEDS, it was with pretty clear guidance that this would be a kind of a one-off. It was a much smaller region than is typical for a comprehensive economic development strategy, but given the work that had been done around the closure, impending closure at that time of Vermont Yankee, the amount of enthusiasm there was at the regional level for doing economic development planning and the necessity for same, EDA saw a good rationale for allowing Windham to develop its own SEDS. But it was clear from the outset, next go round for a renewal, we'd like a larger region. That led to the discussions about the Southern Vermont zone and bringing Bennington County, you know, doubling basically the critical mass of people served by the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy into the next round. So we're building off the work that was done in Windham County. We had some catching up to do on the Bennington County side. That was pretty clear in the legislation and the recognition of the zone. There was some funding to assist BCRC in kind of developing that capacity, and that's when the Regional Economic Development, or RED Group, was created to kind of oversee the effort on the Bennington County side, working with the Southeast Vermont Economic Development Strategies on the Windham County side. So, you know, all of this has evolved over the last, you know, 3 or so years. I'd note that the legislation that empowered the zone also called for that initial Southern Vermont Economy Summit. That was kind of the culminating event as part of that legislation, and that's what really led to the first creation of the first summit. And, you know, it was successful beyond what we had envisioned, which is why we've, you know, continued it to become what I think now is the largest non-statewide economic development event in Vermont.
So this is a series of projects, it sounds like. You've gone out, you've solicited or asked for ideas or projects that people might have, to the idea being to somehow boost the Southern Vermont economy, which from a lot of indicators seems to be lagging behind the rest of the state. I was looking up some statistics, and the four southernmost counties in Vermont, which include, of course, Bennington and Windham, as well as Rutland and Windsor, are lagging, are among the lowest six in the state out of 13 in terms of population. I think there are two counties up in the Northeast Kingdom that are also kind of roughly in the same ballpark. And I guess I thought that might be an interesting place to begin some of our drilling down into some of the weeds of this here. And this whole demographic question has been talked about a lot, and it seems like there's no obvious pathway out of it. And I guess I just wondered, I'm assuming that at some point or another during the summit meeting on the 23rd, this will be a question that folks will try to confront. I mean, what is what happens should we not turn this around? I mean, if populations remain stagnant and, you know, gets older and by average, I mean, why is that a crisis or a problem?
I think one of the, there's two ways we can look at this. I think one of the important ones, first and foremost, is that in an area that already has an older median age, if that population goes down, then we're not just looking at a reduction in workforce due to, you know, aging out in retirements. We're looking at an inability to keep up with demand and for our employers. So there's, you know, obviously a lot of reduced capacity in that respect. The second one is that a lot of our an important part of Southern Vermont municipalities and communities' identities are their schools. And as we, you know, look at some of our larger high schools in the region down to some of our smaller, you know, sort of one-room schoolhouses, we're in a part of the state that supports both of those. They're built to house a certain number of children. And where it begins to feel a little bit empty, where there's extra classrooms, the burden of maintaining spaces that are not being used ends up being an additional drain on a community. This is something that, you know, the idea of a town without children or schools that are really only filled halfway to capacity is one that draws a lot of sort of the lifeblood and vitality out of the community. But at the same time, when our employers are looking everywhere they can to bring in employees, there ends up being a supply and demand issue that means that they'll have to pay more money or look at more overtime, thus driving down, putting a lot of squeezes on their margins. So we sort of see this as is not the road that we want to go down. It's also the case that we heard it articulated yesterday that sometimes this place can be a place where it's hard to bring people in and it's hard to let people go. And something that I think the last time we spoke back in January, one of our colleagues then, Natalie, was describing, you know, that there's a desire in some members of the community to like grip and hold on tight to the, you know, younger employees and members of the workforce and community members. So it's natural in any region, in any municipality, anywhere, to have people coming and going. That's a standard part of things. But it seems like we are going to need to do, we have work cut out for us in finding the sort of rural competitive advantage that resonates with people to bring them to the area and to ensure that the civic infrastructure and elements that we support with our tax dollars are being supported by additional tax revenues and being utilized to their fullest.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the interesting aspects that evolved out of the SEDS process. You know, it's on its face and in name, it's an economic development strategy. But I think we realized pretty quickly into this process that it's impossible to separate out the things that are traditionally defined as economic development from the importance of the things that are more commonly defined as community development. So by way of example, I think you'll see throughout the strategy, you'll see the importance of things and the need to bolster infrastructure around childcare, transportation, public education, and, you know, those things that really support an economy and allow people to not only live in a region, but to become kind of functioning, contributing employers, citizen members, and the like in the region. So it's impossible to kind of separate those elements.
And affordable housing is probably another one in that mix, too.
Yep.
I know that's been another subject under great discussion for a long time. But I keep on thinking, well, what's the way out of this box? I mean, is there a path that sort of is there? It's just a question of marshaling all the forces in one direction to walk down that path.
Well, so I'll take the initial stab, and I think if you go back all the way to the original Southern Vermont Economic Development Zone report, the lead sentence in the report is Southern Vermont needs more people. I think we need to figure out a series of effective strategies that, you know, functionally repopulate Southern Vermont. And I'm sure there are people who will be viewing this who are like, nope, that's not the direction. That's not what we expect here. That's not why I remain in Vermont or why I came to Vermont. That's not my expectation. But You know, as Jonathan points out, the fact that the state's population peaked in roughly 1970 and has been, you know, stagnant to slightly down since, and in this, you know, much more dire in the southernmost counties, that's just not sustainable. So you mentioned in the economy about sustainable and resilient communities. You know, I think a key element of that is having people who actually live in those communities. So, and we know that for an extended period of time, we have had, you know, we have more people have passed in our region than have been born. And that, you know, that's a relatively longstanding trend in the region with no, certainly as our population gets older, no short-term signs that that's about to turn out. So we need to, I don't know that there's one effective strategy to do that. There are things that we're working on to attract workforce, and certainly Jonathan can talk about the Southern Vermont Marketing Recruitment Program, which was another key recommendation of the Southern Vermont Zone Report. But personally speaking, I think at some point we need to really swing for the fences and come out with some pretty bold strategy to bring more people to Southern Vermont.
And I will note that, you know, when we say bring more people to Southern Vermont, we're not talking like, you know, the population of a large metropolitan area. You know, we are looking for numbers that complement our rural nature. And, you know, to people who might be thinking, you know, that's not for me, I don't want more people because they like the way their community is now. But if we don't get more people, their community is not going to stay the way it is. And so it's sort of bringing it back up to that level, not, you know, passing that. And so I think that's a really important point is, you know, with bringing more people, we're not trying to drastically change how communities are here, because that is clearly one of the most special things about Southern Vermont. But it's about not losing them. And I think that's, you know, sort of my argument when people say, oh, no, we don't, you know, we don't need any more people. It's like, actually,
you do.
You do.
The local volunteer fire department sure does.
Yeah.
That's been a really interesting thing to see. For instance, here, you know, working with through the School and Workforce Partnership and BCIC's Workforce and Education Committee, the Career Month, that is really where a lot of our efforts go in April, has really been focusing on building bridges, you know, and connecting with students in our high schools, in our middle schools, to begin presenting, you know, through some days of interacting with professionals or informational interviews, the professional opportunities in remaining in the area, something where we have probably maybe our one of our greatest inequalities is in the number of, you might say, woodchucks who stay and woodchucks who go abroad or who leave the area. And so one of the easiest ways to grow population, or one of the most effective ways, is to not remove people, or is to help retain them as they proceed through their, you know, educational years and enter into the workforce. Some connections with employers have, you know, are and continue to be enormously helpful. I'll give a little shout out to K&E Plastics down in Bennington, and a very, I thought, thoughtful and creative way of presenting interested students with sort of a pathway forward and thinking about a good and stable, steady job here, is to have the students come by on a Friday and to park at the very far end of the parking lot. So the students walk past all the cars and trucks and see them loaded up with the campers, with the equipment, the stuff that for a fun weekend, and to use that opportunity to talk about, oh, so-and-so's been here since he finished up at Mount Anthony X number of years ago. Yeah, he has his little cabin up in the, you know, et cetera. And it's a way to have the narrative be about the value of getting to stay here, which is sort of its own, is to be presented as its own great opportunity. Mm-hmm. So it's those sorts of partnerships are what help us begin to have those conversations, to reach into, you know, from working with and discussing things with students, to begin working with and discussing things with families, so that they also feel similarly good about that opportunity and those opportunities to remain and to prosper. So that's, while it's, you know, and that dovetails nicely with some of the initiatives that the state has rolled out, like, say, with Stay to Stay, where we have partnerships with our chambers of commerce. You know, Matt Harrington has done a great deal of work. Matt actually was just on vacation down in, was it
Fort Myers,
and he had the time to stop in with a family that had come, a couple that had come up from the state to stay. They were living in Florida and wanted to relocate up there, up here, I should say. And it was just the sort of, you know, having people that are able to have these conversations, whether they're working with students in schools and families here, or individuals who are farther afield who are considering an opportunity to come to the area. It's a good way to make sure that we're reaching all the segments, those that we currently have and those who are evaluating it, which is a really useful thing.
I will note at the summit, we do have two sessions that focus on workforce issues and solutions. You know, one is sort of the, you know, workforce now, you know, those employers that are, you know, have open positions currently, and sort of what are some of the solutions, what are some of the successes that have been happening not only around the region, but maybe even from outside the region. And then also looking at, you know, our future ready workforce, you know, when that generation ages out of the workplace, you know, what are employers doing to bring in sort of the next round of people? And so that's, you know, one of the ways the summit is helping carry that conversation through is addressing those issues with solutions.
Yeah, not just talking about the problems.
Talking
about some of the solutions.
We've done enough of that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we're fortunate in the region that we have employers who are being creative and who are, you know, really trying to address their own future needs, which, you know, has ancillary benefits for the region. In the northern part of the county, I cite, you know, Mack Molding has an incredibly robust and longstanding internship program where they bring in, you know, high school students and college students, rising college students and college students in the summer. A number of those have resulted in long-term employment with Mack. Vermont Country Store has a similar program here in the North Shire. Jonathan mentioned K&E Plastics down in Bennington, but K&E partnered with other manufacturers in the Bennington region and a little further north, including Mack and Hail Mountain Research, NSK, to form together, working with the Career Development Center in Bennington to put on a CNC training program because there was a need for CNC operators. So that was employer-driven.
Yeah.
Saying, we see a need, we're willing to band together, and we don't see this as, hey, that's, you know, that's my CNC person, and, you know, I'm going to try to take it. It's about the need of, you know, generating additional capacity in the region for everybody to benefit.
What do you all see as some of the opportunities there might be for business growth here in this area? I mean, this workforce question, of course, is a central one, and my sense of it is that there are a lot of employers out who are just out there having a very hard time trying to find qualified workers. Let's assume that there's a couple of entrepreneurs out there who say, "Well, damn the torpedoes, we'll go ahead." What are some of the competitive advantages you think that Southern Vermont offers to somebody who has a business idea and wants to set up a facility, whether it's in manufacturing or a service-related business, that would make them want to come here as opposed to, let's say, Chittenden County, which seems to be overflowing with, you know, population growth and where a lot of the business activity in Vermont seems to be happening?
I heard a consultant based out of Pownal make a very salient point, and this is just one, you know, one point, but I thought it was a good one, that the location of the region is actually a real advantage. There's, you know, this is true in a different way, but it's equally true over in Windham County as well, where there's, you know, a lot of the important things for consultants and those with these sort of knowledge economy-based positions where they travel a good bit for work is that there's regularity and sort of something that's very bankable in terms of your time allocations and the travel to a major airport, you know, say in Albany, in Bradley, where have you, is well within an acceptable, you know, radius. That's, you know, when it, wherever it seems like you need to go, it doesn't quite matter what time of year it is. This is anticipated travel time. And so there's a lot of access to markets and a lot of access to infrastructure that broadens your access to markets. And that's a substantial competitive advantage. I was recently having a conversation at the Lightning Jar with someone who was coming in for a half day to use the facility. And he lives in the Boston area and was evaluating his options for the most cost-effective place for him to do his work. And that it's always nice to hear good news. And it was nice to hear that, you know, some of the, you know, cost effectiveness of work in the greater Boston area, of office space, of even sort of co-working space, is on a different scale and than what you would find in southern Vermont. And so that's, you know, it seems like we're finding our advantages along the margins. It's sort of interesting in the bigger picture. The state of Connecticut has recently adopted a policy where it's putting effort and energy into connecting prospective employers considering moving to the area, not in touch with the state and its incentives, et cetera, but with other business owners in the state, that this is one of the best ways to get to know the workforce, get to know the value of locating in a given area. And as Bill just referenced, you know, our employers do a great deal of work in shaping sort of their needs, the pipeline, and ways that they can best position themselves and one another. And that is, you know, another real asset that we have in this area is where there's not even 90,000 people, you know, there's a lot of successes nearby and there's a lot of opportunities to be put in touch with, you know, those individuals. And that can really give a sense for, well, how did you make this work? How did it come to be something where this is a major employer? You've been here for 20, 30 years, or you've grown X over the last 10 years. And that we feel that really enabling our existing employers to have those conversations is one of our best assets.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you mentioned Chittenden County, so we'll play off of that for a moment. I think in terms of access to population, Southern Vermont is much better positioned than Chittenden County. And I don't know the numbers on the Windham County side as well, but my guess is given 91 and travel time, they're probably similar. But within 40 miles of, you know, of drawing an X from Bennington and extending out 40 miles, you have nearly 2 million people, you know, of access. So that's access to people who, you know, if you have a tourist-based economy, a potential tourist, if you have you need workforce, that's potential workforce. Those are potential customers. So we're pretty well positioned there. I don't remember with whom I was speaking the other day, but they were saying, you know, it's really interesting because they were talking about travel time to Montreal and Boston and New York. And it's like, you know, from where we are, it's about 3 to 3.5 hours to kind of some really, doesn't matter where you want to go.
Right.
That's, you know, that's what it is, which is not, you know, it's not too much of a burden. Plus the good access, you know, to really easy access to international airports, as convenient as if you live in Boston trying to get out the Logan. I mean, I'll take my drive to Albany to try to, in 40 minutes, as opposed to trying to get out to Logan from downtown Boston in 40 minutes.
Right.
Or as a former New Yorker, I'll say, from getting to Brooklyn out to JFK.
Exactly correct.
I think it's, you know, sort of to your point of that business-to-business connection, we're really utilizing that when we're trying to attract workforce and residents here. That same sort of like, you know, say I'm moving or thinking about moving here, you know, we're trying to make those personal connections so they can ask similar questions. How did you make it work? What do you find special about this place that made you take that leap? And so I really think our scale is something that is, you know, uncomparable. And, you know, we use that to our advantage is making those personal connections.
So I'm sorry, go ahead. Trying to ask another question.
No.
Just to try to put a point on this, I think the challenge is these strategies that we're employing, stay to stay, the business to business connections, the kind of one-off employer programs are all really high touch. And it's a lot of time, energy, effort, focus to try to attract an employee or two or a family or two here or there. I think the long-term key to success is figuring out what are those best practices and how do we replicate them on a little bigger scale. I think Sarah's point is an important one. You know, we're not looking to, you know, triple the population in southern Vermont. We're looking to create a pipeline that maintains the sustainability and resiliency of southern Vermont.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you mentioned that because there's been a lot of talk about the state-to-state program and some of the other incentive programs that the state has been running. I guess I just wonder, what's been your sense of how those have been going? I don't get the idea that there's been a huge influx of people coming in, but they seem to have generated a certain buzz out there about the state and kind of raised our profile a little bit. Do you have a sense that if we can stick with this for a year or so or maybe longer, that would begin to bring some folks into the state that would never have had Vermont on their radar?
I think that that has happened. I think that some of the folks that in the Bennington County side, some of the relocations have been individuals who would say that exact thing. I never would have thought that I would live up here. The amount of funding that's been, you know, marked for this, for stay to stay, is paltry compared to the amount of people that have just talked about this, that have, you know, nationwide, worldwide, that it's very, you know, the headlines it's generated have been worth a great deal more. But it has been really wonderful to see the, in some ways, because we are making that such an important need to us, a lot of hands are on deck when these events come around. I know that in Brattleboro, et cetera, it's the same story, that just about everyone that you could ask for that to come out, you know, for a nice meal, a good place to go and spend time, a lot of events, that really you're able to put our best foot forward because proprietors like Lynn Green at the Fortune's Bed and Breakfast will sort of open house for this event to take place. And, you know, so you can have this sort of outstanding kind of meet and greet and gather, and a lot of people will be there to answer a lot of different kinds of questions. And so from, you know, Alabama to Colorado, and I mean, possibly even down in Florida. And that is a very unusual, usually it's
the other way around.
Head south. I mean, I think it is the case that it has really reached all corners and with a lot of success.
Yeah, I mean, I have to be honest. When the legislature passed last year the remote worker incentive, you know, paying up to $10,000 in relocation expenses for people who may move to Vermont to work for companies outside of Vermont, and knowing, you know, our nearly daily experiences of working with, you know, businesses that say I need more workforce, so, you know, it was a little bit of a head scratcher. And then you realize for the $100,000 that was set aside for the legislature, that generated over 1 billion impressions worldwide. For that program, and the amount of, I mean, you know, it was a really effective and efficient investment in resources for those 1 billion impressions. People are still talking about it. You know, and the legislature now is looking at tweaking that and, you know, potentially, depending on what the outcome is of this session, having some money available to assist people in relocating to work for Vermont businesses. And, you know, I think it was a trial balloon, but stay-to-stay, getting some national press coverage, the remote worker incentive program, getting national and worldwide press conference. I mean, coverage, you could barely go anywhere without, you know, seeing it somewhere, including in the UK and, you know, in Asia and elsewhere about kind of this, what's Vermont doing? So, again, these things are all kind of high touch. Jonathan mentioned kind of everybody rallying around when it's a stay-to-stay weekend. In my mind, that just shines a light on how great the understanding is of the importance of creating the right quantity and quality of workforce in our region, and frankly, just figuring out that path to getting more people in southern Vermont.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of the legislature, there are a couple of issues that they're talking about up in Montpelier that I would think, anyway, would have some kind of impact on what we're all trying to do here. And I'm thinking of two in particular, the minimum wage bill and the paid family leave. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, you could make an argument that having a minimum wage scheduled to go to $15 an hour by 2024 and having a paid family leave program that would obviously be attractive to younger families, like we were talking about at the start of the show here, would be pluses when it came to trying to address some of the issues around, you know, workforce and population and that sort of thing, housing. But of course, then there's the other side of the equation, which is that small businesses in particular are going to look at this and go, okay, so now I have a choice of basically cutting my profit margin to something substantially less than what it may be now, or laying off people. And I guess I just wondered, is there any sense among your colleagues around what is the sweet spot here in all of this, if there is one?
You know, I think we really, with the exception of Laura Sebelia, our colleague, who is also a legislator, I think we, you know, largely kind of try to stay away from the political elements of that. I think the impacts on individual businesses would be just that. I think you may talk to half a dozen businesses and get a different take on in each case. In general, though, I think just writ large, I think the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy talks about the importance, again, of those things that support people living in the area to result in a vital workforce. And, you know, I don't know exactly where that ball comes down. But if you go all the way back to the beginning and kind of the two overarching goals of the Southern Vermont SEDS, it is strengthen business and support people. So I think the key is in finding the balance to allow strong, vital businesses and to figure out ways to support people that allow them to be productive contributors to both society and as a part of the workforce in the region.
So another point I wanted to hear from you all about. Sarah, you mentioned this connectivity breakfast, connectivity in terms of broadband and internet service. We talk about, you know, this demographic issue and stuff like that, and Vermont is hardly unique in any of this. I mean, I think it's important that we emphasize that we're not the only one in this boat. We could go to almost every rural state in the country, probably, and have a group of people talking about the same kind of stuff. But how does broadband fit into this, and how important is it for us to have a really robust, you know, broadband? It looks like we're not going to be too far down the road before we have 5G service available in certain places anyway. Mm-hmm. Is there any place in Vermont that's set up to have 5G? I know Springfield, actually, oddly enough, is one area that might well be well-positioned to have that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess I just wonder, is there any sense of how important it is for us to kind of really be right there on the cutting edge of having the best possible broadband we can?
So, you know, I'll take, you know, and I know this is an issue, and, you know, people, I think, when we hear these challenges, don't necessarily separate out all the time broadband, kind of internet access and cell coverage, you know, because they're different things. They're both kind of vitally important to the ongoing economy, and particularly if we're looking to attract younger demographic to come and live in the region, you know, those things are really important. I think we see huge kind of disparity even within the region about what's available, and I'll, you know, brought my in-laws from San Diego back to the airport last night, and every time my father-in-law comes here from San Diego, he's like, I can't believe how much better your broadband is here than what is available to us in San Diego.
Okay, you know, that's never expected to hear.
You know, that is in, you know, I live in, you know, two blocks out of downtown.
He's driven up and down Route 7.
No, broadband, again, he also laments the fact that it's really difficult to make a phone call from Northside Drive. Okay, but in terms of broadband access, there are, you know, I think the main areas of economy in our region are pretty well served. Could they be better? Sure, they can always be better. But those are pretty well served. In terms of, you know, the spottiness of cell coverage, that's a challenge, I think, that is going to be difficult to solve completely just simply given our geography and topography. That said, there's a whole lot of attention on broadband and how do we build it out, and, you know, is it the cooperative model or what's the right model for serving the more remote reaches? You know, my personal feeling, you know, at the risk of, you know, offending folks, but wearing my planning hat for, you know, for a moment, I think if you choose to live kind of in a more urban setting, Vermont standard urban setting, downtown Brattleboro or in around Brattleboro or Bennington, I think there's a realistic expectation of a different type of availability of those services than if you're more interested in living in, you know, more remote portions of our region on, you know, 30 acres. Now those are the trade-offs I think people make, and that's not to suggest we don't want to try to get service to as many places as we can. You know, there are business cases that, that these providers need to make. There are ways that we can kind of assist those business providers in trying to make a case where it may not otherwise make sense. But I think expectations have to be realistic as well.
Where does tourism fit into all of this? I mean, that was one of the bedrock industries of Vermont for a long time. I mean, I remember when I first came here in the early 60s, Vermont was the beckoning country. Come here, you could go skiing, all kinds of outdoor recreational opportunities. We all like to think that those still exist and are still going very strong. But, you know, you see motels closing, you see inns closing. I guess I just wondered, you know, what are the numbers and the data telling you guys about where tourism stands? Because that used to be such a huge, and perhaps, well, still is, an important part of certainly the southern Vermont economy.
Yeah, it is. And it's one of the interesting things. There's two sort of tracks to talk about here. One would be the sort of Airbnb model that, you know, has obviously come to southern Vermont, where there is this not as sort of regulated, or it's a more sort of informal kind of you know, payments methods, etc. And that's something that our hospitality, you know, industry is really working to address, or to see it for what it is, and for how substantial a, you know, impact that may have on some of our, you know, smaller hospitality and, you know, our innkeepers. The second is that along with sort of the motel model that you discussed is not dissimilar from the transition from a broad manufacturing sector to an advanced manufacturing sector, where it's really been about the process, and the sort of the premium that can be put on the product has become more important than just the number of beds or the number of options. You know, it has been, I think it's worth pointing out that a town like Manchester has been adding a lot to its capacity, and that goes hand in hand with a well thought out strategy to become a sports tourism destination. That, so, you know, we have seen a lot of investment in the mountains and from, you know, ownership structures and new partners. So there's definitely, I think it's, you know, it seems like every time we're at Mount Snow, there's this new thing being put in place. So there's a lot of belief that what can be done at a very high level is really worth doing and should be done here at a very high level. And I would sort of contrast that, sort of offer that parallel to the manufacturing sector, which has reinvented itself, certainly in our region, as a place that offers this sort of very high level of, you know, competence and a very high sort of a very valuable product. And I think that sort of transition is one that we've seen going along with the hospitality sector as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, to Jonathan's point, huge new and ongoing investment at Mount Snow, upcoming new investment at Stratton. So I think they're kind of the larger kind of anchor tourism institutions in our region are continuing to go from, you know, Bromley, Johnny Seesaw's, you know, the new hotels in Manchester. And I would just briefly put it in a plug for kind of the value of this planning process. A lot of people think, oh, you know, here's another plan, what's gonna come out of it? But that strategy that Jonathan just mentioned in Manchester about becoming kind of this hub for sports tournaments, leveraging what, you know, was soon to be seen as, you know, at that point, new beds to be created in the town, was really something that kind of emanated from and discussed and was ruminated about and really evolved from the Northshire Economic Development Strategy, or the NEDS. I mean, that was one of the recommendations in the NEDS, was for Manchester to pursue that, create the appropriate infrastructure. You know, the fields were created, you know, right after that. And, you know, Manchester has seen some really good early success with that strategy. So just a kind of self-congratulatory plug for the planning process and the importance of it, you know, in economic development.
I was just wondering, Sarah, over on the Windham County side of things, you know, as was mentioned earlier in our discussion today, The closure of Vermont Yankee was a huge hit for Windham County, 800 or so jobs, direct employees of that facility. And I think that was one of the spurs, as Bill mentioned, to developing the SEDS. Has the fallout from that been fully contained now, and those that basically been absorbed by the overall economy over on the other side of the mountain?
Yeah, I mean, I think it honestly, it's a long-term process. And unfortunately, the thing about economic development in general is that it's a long-term, you know, you don't do something today and see the results tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So I think we've been seeing and will continue to see sort of the filling in of those of those lost jobs. But we're not ultimately going to see maybe bringing it up to what level we were at. It just takes a long time. And I think that's one of the difficulties about working in this field and communicating that to the public is, you know, we as humans, I think, want that, you know, instant gratification. And it's difficult to say, oh, but if we do this today, you'll see the benefits 10 years from now. Yeah. Right. Just hold on, you know.
Okay.
But I think, you know, it's a daily, you know, it's daily work, but it's getting done. And I think we're, you know, well on our way to righting the ship, if you will.
So just getting back real quick before we have to run here to the conference and the SEDS project. There are going to be a number of projects that are going to be discussed and unveiled and talked about. Mm-hmm. What are the next steps for these? Are they going to be like sort of approved for something, or is there going to be money made available to the successful projects? What will be the follow-up to all of that?
So I will note there were 73 projects submitted this year, which is amazing.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah. And they're all, you know, relevant to the document that we've, you know, worked at putting together. And essentially what we do is take those projects, and they were reviewed by sort of a separate project review committee. Mm-hmm. And they ranked all of those projects and chose vital projects, which essentially help advance our objectives and goals that are outlined in that SEDS document. And those specific vital projects will be announced at this SEDS celebration at the summit. However, any project that was submitted to the SEDS is included in the SEDS. So, you know, the vital projects might get, you know, a little more notoriety, maybe a little more press. But if your project was submitted to the SEDS, it is included into that.
So to answer your question, there is no direct funding that comes directly from the SEDS for these projects. However, there are some significant advantages to having your project included in the SEDS. And as Sarah noted, every project submitted gets included in the SEDS, and that's an annual process where those projects are updated. So we'll have a new set of projects next year for each of the 5 years of the SEDS. So it's very dynamic. But here are the kind of two key points from my perspective. It creates additional potential for funding, makes you more competitive when you apply for state or federal funding to be able to draw a direct linkage between a certified and approved comprehensive economic development strategy in your region, where your region, through this public process, has said, this type of economic development is what we want to see in the region. So you can draw a direct linkage there, and that mm-hmm. may open eyes in both the public process and for private funding. The other element that I think is really important is that in each of these 73 cases, there's an organization, a group of individuals, a business, a person, mm-hmm. whomever, who has said, you know what? This isn't the type of thing that they ought to. Yeah. This is the thing that I'm willing to. Yeah. I mean, and having 73 projects submitted where there is a dedicated individual or group or business or entity that says, you know what? This is something that's important to us, and we're willing to do it if we can figure out a path forward. I think that speaks volumes to what the importance of the process and how engaged this region is in trying to bring about positive economic change.
Mm-hmm. And so next year, will there be opportunities for more projects to be submitted?
Of course. Yep. Every year.
Annual process.
Okay.
And, you know, our hope is to keep the summits rolling and every year make this announcement and make it kind of a celebration of what it means to do business in Southern Vermont, why it's important, and frankly, why you can be successful.
Okay. Well, again, May 23rd, all day long.
All day long.
Grand Summit at Mount Snow. Go to sovermontsummit.com if you haven't yet got your ticket. And I'm sure you're going to want to go now. Thank you all for being here today and talking about
thank
this.
You,
really important stuff has a bearing on just about everybody who lives here in the two-county area. Well, all of Vermont, really.
Yeah.
Right.
And I want to thank Sarah Lang, Bill Colvin, and Jonathan Cooper for being with us today. And thank you for being with us as well. Hope you've enjoyed the show, and we'll see you again the next time.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.